Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, May 26, 2020. Front page. Energy. PBPA report shows industry's contributions. $9 billion in taxes and royalties came from Permian in 2019, by Mella McEwen. A new report issued by the Permian Basin Petroleum Association aims to put a figure on the contributions the Permian Basin's oil and gas industry has made to local, state, even national and global economies. The report, Permian Basin Enriching Texas, was developed by the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. We're excited about the report, PBPA President Ben Shepherd said last week in a phone interview. This is different from other reports in that it focused on the Texas side of the Permian Basin. Shepherd said the report, which takes a comprehensive look at the data, was needed because certainly these days everyone knows the Permian Basin and are well aware of the tremendous impact of oil and gas, not just in Texas, but globally. But the contributions are not well known. We felt it was important to try and paint a clearer picture of the impact. To get a better understanding of the industry's contributions, he said they needed to start with a baseline. If you don't know where you've been, you'll never know where you're going, he said. Texas oil and gas producers directly contributed a record $13.4 billion to the Texas Treasury through taxes and royalties, just beating the 2014 record of $13.3 billion, according to the report. The record set in 2014 was driven by oil prices, whereas in 2019 it was driven by production. The price of oil had fallen 40% during that time, while production was up 67%. The report stated that in 2014, $6.4 billion, or 48%, came from the Permian Basin. By 2019, the Permian accounted for $9 billion, or 67% of Texas oil and gas taxes and royalties. The thing that surprised me was the fact that, as much as Texas likes to brag about its oil and gas, all of the growth in the past 5 years has been in the Permian Basin, Dale Kramer, TTARA president, said in a phone interview. The state's numbers are off the charts, but they're off the charts because of the Permian Basin. The $9 billion paid by Permian producers is the equivalent of $312 for every man, woman, and child in Texas, or $937 for a family of three, what Kramer called a Permian dividend for the rest of the state. If you look at the taxes Permian Basin producers pay, severance taxes, yes, but also a lot of sales taxes. About everything used to drill a well is subject to sales tax. And property taxes. If you just focus on the Permian Basin, that's $900 per family the industry is paying that individuals don't have to, Kramer said. The industry generates enough revenue so that Texas doesn't have to ask other taxpayers to pony up. Kramer said those taxes fund education, roads, and health care. The industry is Texas's goose that lays the golden egg, he said. Texas's oil and gas industry was credited for the Texas miracle that largely shielded the state from the Great Recession of 2008, and despite the hard times the industry is going through now, Kramer said it will bring the state through the economic devastation of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have to take home the message that you need to be careful and you don't take the industry for granted. The Permian Basin has generated tremendous dividends for the rest of the state, Kramer said. The industry is going through hard times and you need to be careful and do things to protect the industry. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Shepherd agreed, commenting, Dale mentioned the golden goose. We hope they don't pluck too many feathers. At a glance, revenues from taxes and royalties paid by Permian producers in 2014 was $6.4 billion, or 48%. In 2019, it was $9 billion, or 67%. Rigs running. In 2014, half the state's operating rigs were in the Permian. In 2019, over 70% of the state's rigs were in the Permian. Oil production. In 2014, less than half the state's oil came from the Permian. In 2019, over two-thirds of the state's oil was from the Permian Basin. And natural gas. In 2014, the Permian accounted for only 17% of the state's natural gas production. In 2019, it was almost 40%. MISD Chief Goes Back to Familiar Place for Leadership Picks by Stuart Doreen. Last week, Midland ISD filled two of the highest-ranking positions in the district, the Chief Academic Officer and the Chief Operations Officer. And Superintendent Orlando Riddick went to a place he knows well to make these selections. The Chief of Midland ISD's Chiefs selected a pair of top officials he worked with at Cedar Hill ISD, a district in southwest Dallas County where Riddick was superintendent before his arrival in Midland. Midland ISD announced Lisa Goodnow will be the next Chief Academic Officer, a position which has been vacant since last fall. The district also stated that Kelly Spencer will replace James Riggin as the Chief Operations Officer. Riggin announced his retirement this spring. In selecting candidates for the roles of Chief Academic Officer and Chief Operations Officer, I reviewed numerous resumes, Riddick said in an email to the Reporter Telegram. In the case of the Chief Academic Officer role, the search even extended nationwide, with MISD interviewing candidates hailing from Houston to Chicago and everywhere in between. Ultimately, Dr. Goodnow and Ms. Spencer were the top candidates based upon their employment history, demonstrated results, and passion for the work. Goodnow comes to Midland from Austin ISD, where she has served as an assistant superintendent for the past 2 years, overseeing multiple departments, including special education, academics, social and emotional learning, multilingual, health services, and early childhood. Before that, she served as executive director of academics and social and emotional learning. Goodnow began her career in 1989 teaching middle school history and English in Austin ISD. She also served as a principal in Hayes CISD and later in Cedar Hill ISD, where she oversaw academics and school leadership from 2014 to 2016. Riddick was at Cedar Hill ISD from 2014 to 2017. Academic performance has been an area where Midland ISD has struggled for more than a decade. The Texas Education Agency reported last fall that 9 Midland ISD campuses received failing grades and another 10 record Ds. Only a total of 4 earned an A or a B. The district has also struggled to reach goals set by district leaders as part of the Lone Star Governance Program. I had the opportunity to visit Midland ISD and meet principals, teachers, and teacher assistants. I could really tell that Midland ISD was about kids first, Goodnow said in a press release provided by the district. I'm excited to be a part of a school community that shares the strong commitment to meeting students' and teachers' needs. I'm eager to join the Midland ISD family and community and serve on a dynamic leadership team with truly caring educators. I'm also excited about a team that looks ahead and takes an innovative approach to education. Spencer comes to Midland ISD from Cedar Hill ISD, where she has served as deputy superintendent since February 2018. Cedar Hill ISD's website states Spencer has spent all 22 years of her education career at Cedar Hill ISD. She began as a fourth grade teacher, worked in the district special education department, eventually becoming the department's executive director. Spencer became the assistant superintendent of operations in 2014. As stated no less than six times in the job description for the position, bond preparation is a priority of the position. The school district narrowly lost a $569 million bond election in November. My family and I are excited to join this community, Spencer said in the release. I look forward to serving the students, staff, and stakeholders of the district. With the latest moves, Riddick's staff has evolved to the point that he has hired or created positions for the eight highest-ranking positions, according to the district's pay plan. The top four pay grade positions are Chief Academic Officer, Goodnow, General Counsel, Sid Pounds, Chief Operations Officer, Spencer, and Chief Financial Officer, Daryl Dodds, with a salary range of $147,120.04 to $183,487.64. The other four positions are Chief of Staff, Katie Atkins, Chief Communications Officer, Elena Ladd, Chief Human Resources Officer, Woodrow Bailey, and Chief Transformation Officer, Elise Kale. Riddick said in the release, Goodnow and Spencer are highly effective leaders, adept at implementing strategies that lead to improved student outcomes. Both individuals were integral to the work that occurred under my leadership at Cedar Hill, leading that district to a B rating, Riddick said in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. Just as we are working on here, at Cedar Hill, we implemented strong systems and processes, worked to maintain a solid physical position, fostered innovative campus leadership, and strove to listen and respond to the community. Ms. Spencer and Dr. Goodnow both bring the dual perspective of educators and parents and understand the importance of teacher and community engagement. I look forward to their arrivals and introduction to the Midland ISD family. Texas Army National Guard helps West Texas Food Bank by J.C. Lewis. The Texas Army National Guard has been helping the West Texas Food Bank distribute and pack pantry boxes for the past 2 weeks. Before the guardsmen arrived, staff were having a difficult time keeping up with the increased need, said WTFB Marketing Director Craig Stoker. The food bank has seen a drastic increase between how many people it was serving between April 2019 and April 2020. Last year, the nonprofit served 2,986 unduplicated clients. This year, it served 6,165 unduplicated clients, Stoker said. U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Oscar Gallegos is the platoon sergeant for the General Support Unit in Midland. A platoon of 30 men and women will be helping the West Texas Food Bank until at least the end of the month, he said. We have been building food boxes, he said. We are up to 500,000 pounds of food that we have packed at this location as of last week. They start packing food boxes at 7:30 a.m. each day, with the goal of packing 54 boxes for 30 pallets. Gallego said they have been packing about 1,620 boxes a day, with the week goal of 5,000 boxes. Gallego said they received orders from the Texas Division of Emergency Management to help at the food bank, and it has been a rewarding experience. It is very rewarding to see the people and to be helping out during this time, he said. Help feed the hungry, WTXFoodBank.org/donate-money. Midland Reporter-Telegram opinion page, Tuesday, May 26th. Guest view. Fear of virus shouldn't be excuse for not going to ER for other illnesses. A man in his 20s tried to ignore the growing pain in his belly, toughing it out at home with over-the-counter painkillers. By the time he showed up at the Medical University of South Carolina, perhaps 10 days later than he should have, he had developed a large abscess that was gnawing through the muscle in his abdominal wall. What should have been a routine surgery and a night in the hospital had become a lengthy and difficult inpatient stay with surgery and antibiotics to control a widespread infection, the hospital's trauma medical director, Everett Erickson, told Bloomberg News. From appendicitis to heart attacks to strokes, it's a scenario playing out across the nation. People are reluctant to seek medical care out of fear of being exposed to coronavirus when they go to an emergency room. Albuquerque is no exception, as people with classic cardiac symptoms such as pressure and heaviness in the chest and difficulty breathing are often waiting 12 to 24 hours to go to the ER. And unfortunately, many times the ship has already sailed, so to speak, on their heart, said Dr. Mark Sheldon, interim chief of University of New Mexico Hospital's Division of Cardiology. Most of the damage is done in the first couple of hours. While the fear of being exposed to the novel coronavirus is understandable, people need to know that at this point, the exposure risk seeking emergency hospital care is minimal. And it's certainly far less of a risk than not seeking treatment for a stroke, heart attack, or ruptured appendix. At Lovelace Health System, for example, medical director Vesta Sandoval said there are separate emergency rooms for COVID and non-COVID patients, and there are separate operating rooms and floors as well. It's like a hospital within a hospital to allow for treating COVID patients while caring for people with other medical problems without fear of cross-contamination. UNM Health Sciences Chancellor Mark Roth says UNMH has put in place very effective ways to protect our patients, regardless of why they come to the hospital. As of Monday morning, we have had zero patients infected with COVID while in the hospital. Presbyterian, which operates Albuquerque Ambulance, has similar screening and patient safeguards. Despite that, Ambulance Service Director Scott Casper says in recent weeks, his units are seeing 25 to 30% fewer runs than projected. The patients we are seeing tend to be sicker, he says. What we're hearing anecdotally is, I waited before I called because I just didn't want to go to the hospital. Coupled with the state order dramatically limiting non-emergency type medical procedures, some worry illness and mortality from unaddressed health issues could rival the damage inflicted by the virus in regions less affected by COVID-19. It's parallel health crises. While there are weekly press conferences on the dangers of the virus and what to do to avoid spreading it, New Mexicans' unaddressed health problems are an incredibly serious issue that gets much less attention. People need to understand this. Our medical professionals have put elaborate systems in place to protect you from contamination. If you have serious symptoms that would have had you dialing 911 or going to the ER a year ago, don't hesitate to go now because you're afraid of COVID-19. It's not a good reason to put your life at risk. Albuquerque Journal, distributed by Tribune Content Agency. Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American from Tuesday, May 26, 2020. Front page. Odessa's ABCs. O is for oil, now available. By Ruth Campbell. Although Adrian Vega has written many books highlighting the adventures of El Super Lector, Super Reader, his most recent, O is for Oil, highlights the attractions and originality of Odessa and West Texas. It would be part of the Power Bag Initiative, which launched in January of this year. Power stands for the power of words and early reading. The bags are given to parents of all newborns at Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center, and include a Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Milestone Moments book, a CDC age-level baby book, a scholastic book, baby toy keys, a baby bib, articles, a magnet, and website for information about additional resources. The purpose of the initiative is to encourage the community to read, speak, and interact with children as frequently as possible, beginning at birth. About 5,000 babies are born each year at both hospitals. Research has shown that there is a major word gap in words spoken and the types of messages conveyed between children born into poverty and children born into working class or professional families, a news release said. Data from 2019 from ECISD indicates that 57% of kindergartners who attended pre-kindergarten were not kindergarten ready, and that 65% of the kindergartners who did not attend pre-kindergarten were not kindergarten ready. Vega is the executive director of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin. O is for Oil was published by Mascot Books and comes in hardcover and is available locally at the Ella Noel Art Museum and the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. E in the book is for the museum, and M is for the Marriott. It is illustrated by Agos Perjogo, a freelance children's book illustrator. Vega said he narrowed the illustrators down from about 15 candidates. He has never met Perjogo. I ultimately felt that Agos Perjogo really did a great job of illustrating or capturing our community, Vega said. Throughout the process, the publishers would check with me and say, "Do you approve this?" or "How's this go?" I think they did a phenomenal job, Vega said. Basically, the way that it worked was when I sent them the manuscript, I sent them images per page that represented that element, and then they took the manuscript and then the artist did renderings, their interpretations of the images that I'd sent, Vega said. He said he ran what image would go with what letter it was by just being in the community and running it by some people on the Power Bag Committee. There were some letters that I was just stumped, thinking, okay, in our community, what represents what? So it was through having conversations with others that he decided what made sense, Vega said. There were also letters where too many things came to mind. But the back of the book says it captures the heart and spirit of this great community through well-known images, places, and activities. From art, nature, culture, education, and energy, see what makes Odessa and West Texas a great place to live. The process of creating the book began in August or September of 2019. The target date for release was May 2nd. Which was going to be the Books of the Basin Festival. The hope was to have a panel discussion about the power bag and reinforce and spread the word about early literacy. There also would have been a book signing. What this represents for us, a community, is one thing, but really the purpose is to reinforce or drive that message of early literacy in our community, because not only is it an alphabet book, but the fact that every baby born at the hospitals will get one of their first books given to them through that power bag is going to be about our community in different images, Vega said. Now that the book is in physical form, Vega says he is excited. I'm proud of it from the standpoint of, I think it's a great representation of our community. I think it's a great example of community pride, and the whole idea behind it was to highlight what makes our community great. It's not just the images, but as the back of the book says, it's all of these things that kind of represent our community spirit and ultimately what makes West Texas and Odessa a great place to live, Vega said. Director of Marketing and Community Relations at ORMC, Madison Tate, said the book is a nice gift for new parents. I think it's a great addition and final touch to all the resources the Power Bag offers to parents. The fact that it combines learning with Odessa's history and culture is a fun way for parents and children to practice literacy and teach them about the community they call home, Tate said in a text message. Sandra Eoff, who co-owns the Marriott with her husband Toby, said the book is now for sale in the hotel gift shop. She added that they were excited to partner with XTO Energy to fund the printing of the books. They are very pleased with the final product. I love the collaboration with the Odessa entities, and it's able to teach young Odessans about all there is to offer in Odessa, Eoff said. The Education Partnership of the Permian Basin is a nonprofit organization focused on supporting and improving the Permian Basin from cradle to career. Proceeds will go to the Power Bags Power Initiative. Downtown Pharmacy Making a Go of It by Michael Bauer. For Dr. Brian Meyer and his wife, Shay Meyer, the first couple of months of operating their new pharmacy have been interesting, to say the least. The pharmacy, located on the first floor of the Bank of America building on 700 North Grant Avenue, opened up on January 6th. Then, 2 months later, COVID-19 made its way to West Texas. It slowed us down, Shay, who works as the pharmacy's retail manager and technician, said. No one is going to the doctor, even though it is better today. People aren't going to the doctor for things like they normally would. But owner Brian, who has worked in the pharmaceutical business for more than 25 years, added that he and his wife's pharmacy isn't the only one that has been affected by the widespread of COVID-19 around the country. We didn't have too much of a base when we started to say that we slowed down too much, Brian said. We just didn't speed up as much as we would. But in general, pharmacies have not had as many customers. Places like CVS have been around 30% down, and a lot of it is because they don't have the entire place open or are doing curbside delivery, so that makes it tougher. At first, Brian and Shay said they weren't 100% ready, but decided to open their doors and see what happened. We were just getting stuff together, Shay said. We weren't completely ready, but we decided to open the door and see who would trickle in. Since then, business has been slowly building. Brian has always kept the possibility of owning his own pharmacy in the back of his mind over the years, but he never thought it would happen. I've always thought about it, Brian said, but it's an insane amount of work. There's a lot that goes into running a pharmacy. But after being talked into it, Brian eventually went through with it. A friend of Brian's talked him into opening his own pharmacy, and so then he was showing me the prices of drugs, and they're not as expensive as you might think, Shay said. In fact, they're not as expensive to sell. They're marked up ridiculously at a chain pharmacy. According to Brian and Shay, what makes Sunflower different from other pharmacies was the elimination of middleman fees by not accepting insurance plans or discount cards. The middleman is the insurance company, Brian said. It's the pharmacy benefit managers. It's people who manage the prescription and medical plans for big companies. They're setting the prices a lot higher. Here, generics aren't priced as high as other pharmacies. We're just pricing them as best we can. With that, Sunflower has been able to provide thousands of generic medications and have been able to help those who might be uninsured or underinsured. Unlike some businesses during COVID-19, social distancing hasn't been too big of an issue for the store, due mostly to its small size. It's not too busy here, so people aren't as afraid to come in here like other places such as Walmart or CVS, Shay said. But being located in downtown Odessa and being close to Medical Center Hospital has provided the store with opportunities. We love the location, Shay said. We love to be a part of the downtown area. We've had some prescriptions called in from the hospital, which surprised us. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases 151. Ector County negative 1,957 out of 2,236 tested, with 128 pending, 4 deaths. Midland County, 123 confirmed out of 2,438 tested, 12 deaths. Texas, 152,268 confirmed, with 906,074 tested. Total Texas deaths, 1,506. U.S. cases, 1,637,456 total confirmed, and 97,669 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. Therapeutic Mentoring. The Horse Center, Incorporated, 2306 East County Road 140, Midland, has scheduled H2 Horses and Heroes Equine Peer Therapeutic Mentoring 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. each Wednesday. There is no charge for veterans and first responders. Equine Peer Therapeutic Mentoring Group is a non-traditional therapeutic approach to mental wellness. For more, call 634-8726. Teen Artist Residency Program. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, are taking applications for its Teen Artist Residency Program, an intensive one-week summer art program geared to offer a unique art experience in a museum setting, working with artist Alice Lease, June 22nd through the 26th. This program will provide opportunities for students ages 13 to 17 to create unique artist-led work. Selected students will spend the week with Lease creating watercolor and acrylic paintings. Accepted students will work in a fun and interactive environment while exploring new techniques and developing their own artistic creativity. Applicants will be chosen by the museum education staff based on completed applications, teacher recommendations, and personal interviews when needed. All program decisions are confidential and final. The following includes dates and deadlines for the program. June 1st, application due, digitally or postmarked. June 8th, notification of acceptance. June 12th, payment of $100 due and acceptance agreement signed and returned. June 21st, 3:30 p.m., private welcoming reception for Alice Lease students and parents. June 22nd through 26th, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., Alice Lease Teen Artist Residency Program. June 26th, to be determined, art installation and opening reception for TARP students and public. Students must apply and be accepted to this program. Early applications are encouraged, and all applications should be received by June 1st or until the program is full. Applications are available at www.noelartmuseum.org. For more information, contact Annie Stanley at 550-9696, extension 213, or email annie@noelartmuseum.org. Court begins 2020-2021 budget review. Ector County Coliseum reopening discussed. Taking COVID-19 pandemic-related economic damages into consideration, Ector County Commissioners today will lay out their goals for the county's 2020-2021 budget and review the current year budget with department heads. In other business, during the 10 a.m. session at the 1010 East 8th Street Administration Building, the panel will consider reopening the County Coliseum for shows and events after having closed it since mid-March. Owing to a May 10th proclamation by Governor Greg Abbott, the court will review an amended notice moving the Democratic and Republican primary runoffs from May 26th to July 14th and doubling the length of the early voting period by starting it on June 29th instead of July 6th. The commissioners will also hear a report from the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance on Interstate 27 and its impacts on the Permian Basin. Reconsider 67th Street improvements to include an extension to U.S. 385 and discuss paying Landgraf Krutcher Associates $68,250 to design improvements of Redondo Avenue between 16th Street and University Boulevard. Consider designating Dr. Timothy Benton to serve as acting local health authority in the absence of the local authority, Dr. B.A. Genadu. Discuss applying for coronavirus funding from the Social Security Administration. Review the county's vendor food services contract with Summit Foods for the rest of this fiscal year and consider extending the agreement for in-house meals preparation for seniors into 2020-2021. Consider a $1,750,000 contract services amendment for the detention center expansion. Discuss hiring a water quality specialist for the health department. Odessa American death notices for Tuesday, May 26th. Bonnie Blue Bailey, Houston. Bonnie Blue Bailey, 74, of Odessa, died Tuesday, May 19th in Houston. Memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. May 27th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Reverend Larry Hood is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Mary Louise Satopic Dugosh. Mary Louise Satopic Dugosh, 79, died Sunday, May 24th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Louise D. Page. Louise D. Page, 93, died Monday in Odessa. Services are pending with Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home, 7509 of Odessa. Bethany Sue Waterman Pauley, Midland. Bethany Sue Waterman Pauley, 56, of Midland, died Saturday, May 23rd in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Ernie Caraballo, Midland. Ernie Caraballo, 61, of Midland, died Thursday, May 21st, 2020, in Midland. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. May 28th at American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the first front page story from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, May 25th. Energy. Oil's rebound exposes shale's weak spot. By Rachel Adams Hurd, Kevin Crowley, and David Weth, Bloomberg. Oil prices have surged more than 75% in the U.S. this month, but don't expect a quick rebound in supply from shale explorers. The quick turnaround in oil markets is exposing the shale industry's big weak spot, lightning-fast production declines. Shale gushers turn into trickles so quickly that explorers must constantly drill new locations to sustain output. And they haven't been doing that. Drilling activity touched an all-time U.S. low after COVID-19 lockdowns crushed global energy demand and explorers slashed spending to survive a crash that has erased tens of thousands of jobs and pushed some companies into bankruptcy. It's a phenomenon that's unlikely attributable to the very geology of shale. Just like a shaken bottle of champagne explodes when its cork is popped, a fracked shale oil well erupts with an initial burst of supply. The froth is short-lived, however, unlike old-fashioned wells and conventional rocks that are characterized by steadier long-term production rates. To offset the decline curve, shale explorers used to keep drilling and drilling and drilling. We just have no new drilling, and these decline curves are going to catch up, said Mark Rosano, founder and chief executive officer of private equity firm C6 Capital Holdings, LLC. That hits really fast when you're not looking at new production. Shale explorers have been turning off rigs at a record pace because the oil route has gutted cash flow needed to lease the machines and pay wages to crews. Going forward, management teams may be hesitant to rev the rigs back up again, despite higher crude prices, because of fears of flooding markets with oil once again and triggering yet another crash. Left unchecked by new drilling, oil production from U.S. shale fields probably would plummet by more than one-third this year to less than 5 million barrels a day, according to data firm Shale Profile Analytics. That would drastically undercut U.S. influence in world energy markets and deal a major blow to President Donald Trump's ability to wield crude as a geopolitical weapon. Such is America's reliance on new drilling that 55% of the country's shale production is from wells drilled in the past 14 months, according to Shale Profile. These are much bigger wells than your small onshore conventional wells. We're in a whole other ballpark here, said Tom Lowry, founder of shale data firm Friezo Lowry Oil Well Partners, LLC. We have these relatively large and numerous shale wells, but they decline fast. To get an idea of how dramatically shale wells peter out, consider this. Less than 20% of this year's expected drop in overall U.S. crude output will come from shuttering existing wells, according to IHS Market Limited. Rather, the vast majority of the supply drop will be the direct result of canceling drilling projects. If you want to be a high flyer and a fast grower, you do that by adding lots of new wells, said Raul LeBlanc, an IHS analyst. But when the drilling stops, slumping output produces a hangover effect. Some explorers are taking more drastic action than others. While Parsley Energy Incorporated and Centennial Resource Development Incorporated have said they're halting all drilling and fracturing, companies such as EOG Resources Incorporated and Diamondback Energy Incorporated plan to continue adding new wells, albeit at a severely reduced pace. Much of the shuttered production probably will be turned back on by the end of this year, Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas President Robert Kaplan said during a Bloomberg television interview. Companies often don't disclose their decline rates until asked, and even then, not everyone is happy about it. Shale pioneer Mark Papa, who founded EOG and, until recently, led Centennial, once reprimanded an inquisitive analyst. "Subhash, we don't disclose decline rates," he said during a February 2019 conference call in response to a question from then-Guggenheim securities analyst Subhash Chandra. "That's kind of one of those things, kind of an entrapment question, so that's just something that we don't really want to talk about." Asked about his company decline rates earlier this month, Cimarex Energy Company CEO Tom Jordan responded, "I hate it."
This article is entitled, "MISD Seeks Director of New Program." In opportunity culture, experienced teachers mentor less experienced colleagues, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD is looking for someone to fill a new post, Director of Opportunity Culture. The post on the district's website states this person will lead efforts to, quote, extend the reach of excellent teachers to improve learning outcomes for all students, unquote. Opportunity Culture, an initiative of the nationwide organization Public Impact, seeks to extend the reach of excellent teachers and their teams to more students for more pay within budget, according to opportunityculture.org. Teachers gain time to plan and collaborate, Everyone gets more support, and students get higher standards, personalized instruction. Midland ISD plans to pilot opportunity culture on 8 campuses: Lee High School, Midland Freshman High School, De Zavala Elementary School, Rusk Elementary School, Scarborough Elementary School, South Elementary School, and Yarborough Elementary School. Districts typically begin opportunity culture design in 5 to 15 schools, according to opportunityculture.org. Schools are added each year. Medium-sized districts, such as Midland ISD, have between 30 and 74 schools and start with 8 in the opportunity culture program in the first year. During the second year, the number of schools increases to 15. That number grows to 20 in years 3 or 4. All remaining schools are added in year 5. Public Impact's approach is to continue our technical assistance engagement until your district reaches 75% implementation, according to the Opportunity Culture website. During those years, we taper our support as your district develops the structures and capacity to lead school design work and professional learning. The Opportunity Culture Director inside the district is grant-funded. The Opportunity Culture District's lead primary responsibility is to ensure fidelity and robustness of the districts and each school's adherence to the 5 Opportunity Culture principles, which are strongly correlated with student growth, according to the job advertisement on the district's website. The Director of Opportunity Culture leads the district's opportunity culture efforts to extend the reach of excellent teachers to improve learning outcomes for all students. The Director of OC serves the OC content expert for the district and manages the OC design process for the district design team and school design teams, ensuring alignment. The Director of OC collaborates closely with district leadership and across functional teams to organize and disseminate information about OC and provide support for staff members in OC roles, develop capacity in principals and teacher leaders in OC schools, and continuously monitor fidelity of implementation across the district and progress toward OC goals. When asked about the program, the Midland ISD Communications Office offered the following. In short, Opportunity Culture is a program whereby experienced teachers extend their reach, impacting greater numbers of students and mentoring less experienced teachers. MISD is launching the program starting in the 2021 school year at 8 schools along with ECISD. The program is a collaboration between MISD, ECISD, UTPB, US Prep, and Public Impact. This is the local page. MISD summer meal schedule begins Tuesday. MISD summer meal schedule goes into effect on Tuesday. Breakfast and lunch meals will be available for grab and go 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at 11 locations. Meals are available for any child 18 or under or those who receive services from school. The locations are Bonham, Bowie, Bunch, Burnett, De Zavala, Rusk, Santa Rita, South, and Yarborough Elementary Schools, Fire Station No. 4, and Twin Oaks Mobile Home Park. Daily menus are available at midlandisd.net under Child Nutrition Services. Drive-by prayer vigil is planned. A drive-by prayer vigil by Midland's leaders is planned for 7 p.m. Wednesday at Chaparral Center parking lot. Mike Gokey, former minister at Stonegate Fellowship, will give the invocation. Craig King will provide worship music via Facebook Live. Then participants will drive around the parking lot where signs will be placed for each leader or official, according to a press release from the event's organizers. For more information, go to bit.ly/36n66CA. Museum launches virtual Family Fridays. Museum of the Southwest is taking summer learning activities online with Family Sci-Fi Friday movie nights on the last Friday of the month, according to its website. Each Friday in June and July, the museum will provide instructions for family fun activities that can be done at home. Activities will be posted at 10 a.m. on the dates listed at museumsw.org. The Amazon supply list for activities can be found on the museum's website. The activities include a variety of online and offline activities, including videos, art projects, games, and interactive web-based activities. Petroleum Museum to open June 1st. The Petroleum Museum will be reopening on June 1st, according to a press release. The museum will continue to provide online engagement opportunities for those who may not feel comfortable returning at this time. The museum will be offering its summer programs with minor rescheduling and additional precautions, according to the release. The museum is decreasing some camp sizes and implementing screening for staff and kids. To register for the camps or for a list of the museum safety protocols, go to pbpetro.org. Park facilities opening. Many of the city's playgrounds and other recreational facilities have opened or are preparing to open. Rentals at Beale Ranch House, Park Pavilions, MLK Activity Room, and Auditorium are beginning Friday. Attendance is limited to 25% capacity, according to a press release from the city. The city's athletic fields will open for practice on Sunday and for games on June 15th. Doug Russell and Washington Aquatic Centers may open by early June. The Parks and Recreation Division is working to hire and train staff. Anyone interested in becoming a lifeguard, pool manager, attendant, or cashier, visit midlandtexas.gov/jobs. Applicants must be 15 years or older. Beale Skate Park and Park Playgrounds open Friday. The exception is Dennis the Menace Park, which remains closed for maintenance. The splash pad at Security Bank Ballpark is open 1 to 7 p.m. daily, except on Wednesdays, when it will be closed for maintenance. Entry will be from the ballpark's southeast gate. The area will be monitored by city staff, who will allow entrance to a maximum of 30 people, 25% of capacity. Children under 14 must be accompanied by an adult. Guests will be expected to practice social distancing, stand 6 feet apart. Restrooms will not be open, and food and drinks, except water, are not allowed. Today in Texas history. In 2005, Texas Supreme Court Justice Priscilla Owen won Senate confirmation as a federal appeals judge after a ferocious 4-year battle. In 2006, former Enron Corporation chiefs Kenneth Lay and Jeffrey Skilling were convicted in Houston of conspiracy and fraud for the company's downfall. Lay died in July 2006 from heart disease, and his convictions were vacated. Skilling was resentenced to 14 years in prison after his original 24-year sentence was overturned.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, Memorial Day, May 25th. Remember those who served. This story was written by Michael Bauer. Memorial Day is about remembering those who never made it back home from the battlefields, and Odessa's Steve Tercero says it's important not to forget that. Tercero, who is a retired educator, served in the United States Marine Corps during the Vietnam War from 1968 to 1972. For him, it's imperative to remember everyone who had to make the ultimate sacrifice. Quote, "The reason that I think it is important is that, first of all, it's important to not forget the sacrifice that the guys have made for our sacrifice," Tercero said. "They gave their all." End quote. What else can you give when you give your life for your country? That's why we have Memorial Day. That's why we should understand what it's all about. It's a day about remembering and honoring those who gave their lives for our freedom and safety at home. Quote, "They gave us the ultimate sacrifice that they could give us the ultimate sacrifice for this country, end quote. A graduate of Pecos High School, Tercero left the Corps as a sergeant. He then went to Silroth State University, where he got a Bachelor of Science degree and a Master of Education in Industrial Arts. He accepted a job in 1977 as a teacher at Hood Junior High School. Later on, he would teach at Ector Junior High before finishing his career as a principal at Burnett Elementary in 2006. But every year on Memorial Day, a wave of emotions comes for him. Quote, "It puts me in an emotional state and a sad frame of mind because a lot of people gave their lives for this country," Tercero said. "They still are. There are still people dying in Afghanistan and Iraq. They're still in danger and in harm's way," end quote. As Tercero discusses his time in the military, there's no shortage of things he's learned during his time in service, including how to be loyal and faithful. Quote, "Hopefully, I learned how to be honorable," he said. "I learned how to start a job and how to complete a job, and above all, you had to learn how to give orders and had to obey them. You had rules and regulations. You had to learn how to be a loyal and faithful Marine and a loyal and faithful citizen to this country," end quote.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.